B-Pod Studios.
On the line with us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast, our good friend, Philadelphia's own Kevin Negandhi. Kevin, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Bob.
How you doing, buddy?
Nice to hear some positivity, right?
Yeah, right.
We need good energy the way the last couple of weeks have gone, and the last couple of months. Let's just say this damn 2020.
Right? 2020 so, definitely sucks.
Yeah. But, when you bring up those images, I've got friends as well as cousins that live in the city, and they were blown away by what they witnessed and experienced over the last week and a half. And then you see that basketball net moving around, and with City Hall in the background. And honestly, it was a moment, at least a moment, where for pause, you're like, okay, this is something that's enjoyable and not heartbreaking. So I'm glad you could bring something like that up to point out. The peaceful protests and what the whole point of this is about on the streets and in many, many cities around the world.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Kevin Negandhi, ESPN, we actually put the call out yesterday for a gentleman named Khalil Gardner to call into the show, who we thought was starting up the whole basketball project, the peaceful protest. And it was actually a young lady named Stefania, who's got 155,000 followers on Instagram, who really started the project to go around playing basketball. But as it turns out, Khalil called in earlier in the show and even said that Ben Simmons and Carmelo Anthony have reached out to say, hey, way to go.
That's cool. And that's the power of sport. And here's the one thing too, through the years, I think that you have the combination of, a lot of build up frustration and a lot of questions and a lot of where is the progress? Have we made any progress? It doesn't feel like we've made any progress for people of color in being recognized. And the one thing that you're seeing that feels different now is there's this build up of it's this combustible buildup of enough is enough. And when we look at past moments of protest, and I'm not going back to times when in the 60s, because I can't reflect on that because I wasn't alive, but when you're going back to certain protests, especially let's just say in the last 5 years, one thing that stands out, we're in a time where there is no sports activity. So you get the chance to see a lot of these athletes who would be in training or in season, and the only way they could express themselves is through, social media or what they do before game, which has generated a lot of conversation. But now that they could be active and involved, right, in their own cities, I think of Rodney McLeod, I think of, Malcolm Jenkins, guys that are walking in the peaceful protest because they're involved. You go to city by city, you start to Deshaun Watson in Houston. These guys had the opportunity to do that. And I also think that there's a generation of kids, many of them who are in college, that witnessed this when they were a little bit younger and now have a stronger voice. And I'm talking about athletes, college athletes. There is no real platform for college athletes. There is no union, right?
Right.
When you look around. And I think that what you're seeing is the tie-in from social media, understanding that they have a voice and that they have power. That's the one thing that stood out and what has made, I feel, the last 10 days different from what we've experienced ever before.
No, let's turn the page for a second. I know we'll go back to it, especially with Drew Brees' comments and now his apology. But the NBA is supposed to take a big step today. And you want to talk about hope and sports bringing people together. They're supposed to vote on a 22-team tournament, more or less, to decide a champion for the 2019-2020 season. It seems like a lot of logistics still have to be ironed out. When do you think the NBA will hear an official word, not just from Woj, no disrespect to Woj, the man makes all the announcements, but when do you think we'll see Adam Silver on the camera, making an announcement that we'll get the NBA back?
Well, the voting will be taking place today at 12:30 by the NBA Board of Governors, and it looks like it's going to happen. Because whatever Woj says, it actually happens. I love that guy.
So, he's the best.
To me, I think Silver is one of those guys. I really admire him because he was at the forefront. He was the first sport where he was like, "We're shutting everything down," and he's not the type of guy where he's going to rush anything. So to me, when he says something, it always carries weight because it's always measured. It is always thought through. It's not just his opinion. It is a variety of people around him who have knowledge outside of sports. He's always said, let's listen to the medical professionals, right? So when Adam will say something, and hopefully he says something in the next day and a half for a specific announcement, I think it's going to be one of those thought-out things where, all right, how are we breaking everything down? When we have those answers, we will make sure you have it. I'm anticipating, I could be wrong, that it's coming in the next day and a half, not just the announcement that the season is back with 22 teams, but like what are our logistics? What maybe they wait till next week where they can figure this stuff out. But yeah, Adam Silver has, in a crisis like this, like we've never experienced before, he has become one of the big leaders in the sports world because he understands the weight that is on his shoulders. And everything is measured. It's not off the cuff. I've never heard Adam Silver say, well, you know, maybe in May. No, it's always, we will see what happens, right?
Or we don't know.
He understands it's a fluid situation, right?
My most favorite thing that he said, Kevin, out of all the commissioners, and this was weeks ago, and I said it here on the air to Mark and Jamie, I said, I love that Adam Silver came out last night and said, I don't know.
Yes.
Because nobody wants to say, oh, well, yeah, we could do this, we could do that, and then people run with it when there's absolutely no answers. And I've been saying it all along. I've been around Adam Silver a lot, and I know the ins and outs a little bit of what he does. You're exactly right. You hit it right on the head. This guy, there's not going to be a stone that hasn't been turned over for him to find a way to get this season run and get it run properly and the way people in the league want it to be run when it finally gets started.
And Bob, you nailed it too. True leadership is knowing your limitations. And it's okay in this time to say, I don't know, because if you don't know, it's better than coming out and boastfully saying, oh, this is what we're doing. This is what's going to be happening in 3 weeks. And Silver has never been like that. And I appreciate that because when you're reporting on news and you're going by, you know, certain days and dates and targets, it's best to hear, hey, we don't know yet. And when we know, we'll let you know, but we're trying to find out as well as much as you. And I think that's what this the last 2.5 months have been like for all of us. Like, everything's a fluid situation. And if anybody says they know anything about this situation, whether it's going to be, you know, next week, next month, or let's just say in the fall, if they tell you that they know, my first thought is they have no idea because we still don't have any idea about this virus and where it's going to lead us to later on in 2020.
100% with you. Speaking with Kevin Negandhi of ESPN. Kevin, I asked this question half joking. Did baseball die yesterday? What happened?
Oh, my God.
What was that about? They just walked away from the table? No counter offer? What's happening?
Yeah, you know, and this is the owners. I mean, it's part of a negotiation, but we're seeing it go through publicly. This is the owners saying, well, if people are going to blame somebody, let them blame the players. They're not going to blame us. And, you know, there has to be a compromise, which is incredible. When you go 114 to 50, what is the compromise? Oh, it looks like it's 82 games, right?
Yeah.
That's where we started from the beginning. I think the players have to realize, I've been a huge proponent on the players. When you saw that first proposal by Major League Baseball, you're like, wait a second, this makes sense.
Ugh.
Now, I understand the owner's opinions and perspective that if we do not have revenue coming in from the stadium and the concessions, we're going to lose money in this certain window. I get that. But they don't understand the ramifications of what they're going to lose big picture-wise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if the NBA's on board. What do we see yesterday? The MLS was on board, and they had a deadline. It looked like the end of everything, and then all of a sudden within, you know, our good friend Andrew Brand, you know, deadline spur action, and that's what happened. Somebody has to give Major League Baseball a hard deadline, and when you can do that, then you're going to find out what's going to happen. Now, Rob Manfred it was an attorney. He understands negotiation, and the commissioner of baseball, you know, he's working on the side of the owners. He also has to find a way that this has got to be a compromise. We cannot throw in a CBA or CBA logistics from 2021 because that's where things get crazy. And baseball is in such a unique spot because they could have owned some things. They had 3 weeks to own the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. And now they've lost the narrative because they want to go public with the perception of this, hey, blame this team, blame this side, blame this side, blame this side. And now as a result, we will now interpret it. I think, though, if they stand at this situation and the players don't respond, it'll be catastrophic for the league. And granted, it's all about losing money this year, and they're going to be I'm just saying, public perception-wise, 1994, we all remember the lockout and what it did to that season and how long it took for Major League Baseball to come back, I think, for fans. I think it will be even worse here now. When we're talking about the age group of, 18 to 34, you're going to see a dramatic drop off, and it's already dwindling. It'll be really tough.
Kev, we're going to get you for all four sports today. So we've covered two. I'll hit hockey before Mark hits football. Last week, Gary Bettman came out and said what he said, and everybody was like, all right, here, hockey, here we go. And then we get into do the show the next morning, and we start talking about it, and we start breaking it down, and we even talked to the local Flyers writer here who said, yeah, I'm 75% sure at the beginning of his conversation with us that hockey's coming back. He finished the conversation, said, now I'm about 50-50. What did you get out of what Gary Bettman said last week? Are we closer to hockey, or was he, unlike Adam Silver, just saying really nothing?
I think we're closer to hockey. And I got to give Gary Bettman some credit, right? He got in front of it before any of the other three professional leagues could counter. Now, granted, the NFL is on ice right now trying to figure things out because they've got time on their side. But I think Gary Bettman hit a home run last week. The question is, the one thing Bettman is doing, and what do we talk about with Adam Silver? Adam Silver is being smart, like, hey, we're announcing we're going to come back, but at the same time, we're going to figure it out first. And I feel like that's what Bettman did last week, where let's announce it, this is what we're going to propose. But there was always a caveat, if this is possible, right? And to name, the concept of hub cities and have, those 10 cities and stuff. The one thing they've got to do is the league has to find a way that you get that momentum last week, right? Now, granted, you may not have more answers, but you need to constantly give out some morsels, right? So a little bit. And that is updates. You just cannot just quietly go into a hole and no longer give us updates now, right?
Right.
And I think that's where we're at. So you give a little hope last week, actually a lot of hope last week. Now leave a trail here so we can continue to follow you, right?
Yeah, right.
And that's important by the end of this week that the NHL has to. And I'm not saying give us concrete answers. I'm saying give us a better idea. Have we trimmed it down from 10 cities to maybe 5 cities? Have we figured out, a target date? But I don't want to be hypocritical here, especially where we're just lauding Adam Silver, where it's okay to say, I don't know.
Right.
Bettman, I think, needs to still release something saying, we have not forgotten. We're still headed in the right direction. We are continuing to look at all avenues.
Fair enough.
I know with COVID-19, the NFL kind of having training camps hopefully in July and August and preseason and all that, they've acted like, hey, kind of nothing's going on. We're doing business as usual, other than virtual meetings and stuff. Aside from all that, when you look at the NFL and the state it's in right now, the NFL has been at the forefront of the racial tension going on in the United States, police brutality in the United States. Malcolm Jenkins, Colin Kaepernick, those guys around the league have kind of taken up a cause here, even getting the NFL to put $90 million towards social change. When you see what Drew Brees said yesterday, first off, what was your reaction to it? Did you find it to be tone deaf? And were you even surprised that it came from a guy like Drew Brees?
I think all of it. Drew Brees is a very savvy, intelligent person. So I've had the chance to talk to Drew and interview him a couple times. Everything he does is thoughtful and with purpose. And when you look at the statement, I think you could break it down a couple ways. The first part is one thing. And then the second part, when he discusses about disrespect and making sure you stand up. I come back to one thing. It's been 4 years, right, since mm-hmm. Colin Kaepernick did his peaceful protest. It's been enough time for awareness. It's been enough time to gather information on why he did it. right? Mm-hmm. And understanding that there's a difference between politicizing this and understanding why this is a big deal to Colin Kaepernick and so many people that believe in the Black Lives Movement. It's because they are bringing attention to what is wrong with the system when they experience it in their communities. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And I come back to a couple things. Kaepernick did it, the kneeling, because in the beginning he was just sitting down. He did it after a conversation with a Green Beret, Nate Boyer, who suggested respecting the flag by kneeling. So he was following a guy in the military with that experience, aware and suggesting, hey, this is probably the better way to do it. And people are still finding fault with a protest. If you're protesting, and I'm of Indian descent, and, Gandhi has had a major influence in my life, because without Mahatma Gandhi and his civil disobedience, I wouldn't be here. My family wouldn't have been able to move here. And so understanding what civil disobedience is, it is your right to protest peacefully, but you do it in a way where you don't raise arms. You're not disrespectful. And this whole movement where it suddenly now gets twisted into something else, and now you lose the whole point. You lose the whole point in the messaging. And that's the frustrating part, I think, as you saw on Malcolm Jenkins. Like, we're losing the messaging on the reason why Colin Kaepernick did it, right? Suddenly now it moves, from this conversation of let's bring awareness to the brutality that the Black community goes through when it comes to policing, to now suddenly a patriotic thing. And it was never about that with Colin Kaepernick, and everybody around has expressed that and talked about that, right? And 4 years later, it's like we're having the same discussions over and over again. And are we learning anything? Are we listening, right? And Breeze's, response today about listening. I need to listen more. From the beginning, I need to listen more. The one thing that has stood out the last 10 days is we have seen more people of power who are white in the sports world speak out. You know, the J.J. Watts of the world, right? People that Malcolm Jenkins has said, I can't do it by myself anymore. Our community can't do it. We need your help, right? Like, perfect example is what Aaron Rodgers put out last night on social media, where he said it has never been about an anthem or a flag.
Right.
Not then and not now. Like, listen with an open heart. When you make that statement, and Aaron's a very smart guy, and that stood out to me because that's the whole point. It has never been about that. And he could see it. I think the frustrating part for Malcolm, and you saw a bunch of Saints players, and now you've seen a bunch of NFL players, is, why can't you just see what we're trying to say? Let's not mix it up here the way that messaging was mixed up 4 years ago and throughout the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like we're at a different time in the history of understanding, where it's like, let's have more empathy. Let's understand why. And more people outside of people of color are speaking out and understanding the reasons why Colin Kaepernick did what he did from the start.
Absolutely. Ken, I couldn't be more on the same page with you. I'll be, in all honesty, when it first happened with Kaepernick, I was outraged, because I thought everyone thought of that time when the national anthem is being played as I did. And I couldn't have been more wrong, and I admit that. Kevin, always great.
Mark, I want to say one thing, and I know you guys got to go because of a break.
Yeah,
I want to say one thing, though.
Sure.
For anybody that chastises, Kaepernick's thought and process of kneeling before an anthem, when you look around a stadium, are you cool with the person that's on his cell phone during the anthem, has his hat on during the anthem, is talking during the anthem, walking, sitting down, eating? Like, all those things go on if you look at any environment in a sports environment when the national anthem's going on. I'm one of those guys that stands up.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for what I have, and it's always been that way. But who am I to tell anybody else what they're supposed to do during an anthem? And if you're going to criticize one, look around and see that other people are doing things that are not respecting the flag the way they get outraged when they see somebody that kneels.
That's a great
point.
And
that's what I'll say about it. And because there are many people around stadiums where you look around and be like, well, what are they doing? And are you as mad at that person? while you're talking on your cell phone and you're telling somebody else how to protest. That's the thing that I disagree with.
No, I also love the line, you can only protest when I feel comfortable. Like, what? No, that's not how it works. Not at all.
That loses the point of a protest.
Exactly.
Kev, just real quick, last thing for you, and I wanted to make sure we work this in because, you know, we're obviously both Temple guys, and Merv Jones passed away, PA announcer. Yeah. Just a gentleman of a man. I didn't know him well. I knew him enough to say hello, but he passed away. Involved at Temple University for 30 years, if it longer, went there, obviously. And just your thoughts on Merv.
Merv was a great guy. You know, Merv was there when he just started when I was in school there, and me and him had great conversations. His energy as a PA announcer, you know, you're not just there to, you know, say the names. You're there to deliver the energy in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And Merv was like our voice,
yeah.
Right? I think that, you know, many Sixers fans that grew up with the Zinc hearing Julius Erving, you know, and Matt Cord now, you can relate to that. And, of course, the great Dan Baker, we relate to him when we hear his voice. Merv was like that for us, our Temple Owl fan base. So when you heard him talk, you were like, there it is. All right, it's officially a Temple basketball game, and I'm going to miss the man. He had a gentle heart, always a smile on his face, and the campus lost a great one. And I'm glad you brought it up, Mark.
Of course.
Rest in peace, and our thoughts are with his family. Merv was a good one, man.
Shooting one and one.
Good stuff.
Kev, great talking to you as always, man. Thanks so much.
Always the best. Thank you.
Thanks, Kev.
The great Kevin Negandhi, Temple University product, ESPN. Always great catching up with Kevin. Yeah, Merv Jones just wanted to make sure we gave him a shout-out today.
Yeah.
He could not be a nicer man.
Yeah, I was sad to see that last night. Obviously, we all knew him. A shame. We've lost many good voices, unfortunately. But the fortunate side is, along with Merv, we have had and continue to have a lot of great ones in this city.
Absolutely. Going to run through some more calls when we come back. And also, you know, we've talked about maybe Drew Brees saying the worst thing on a serious note. Well, maybe on a lighter note, somebody else said something that might just be a little bit worse. It's not exactly what you tell a group of protesters. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
Time of the Fanatic 923.